But let us take him back here. The way he got into radio, he started in Enid, started hanging around the town radio stations, I understand. And
yes.
KGWA was the station. As I understand, the students took over the local programming for a day, and Jimmy led off the 7 o'clock news, and the manager liked his newscast. I don't know if Jimmy relayed those kind of details to you or not, but he hired Jimmy, and by the time he was 16 years old, he was a night disc jockey. That was in 1957. And
great.
And then at 17, he was earning $200 a week, and then he went to WKY in Oklahoma City, and that's when he came across the song Poor Little Fool, which was coincidentally written by his future wife, Sharon, and he created a demand for it so big that to this day, it is Ricky Nelson's biggest hit. So here he is, 16 and 17 years old, already at WKY, but then he jumped to Pittsburgh, a major, major market on KQV, and he was making $300 a week. And then by that time, Jimmy was 19, and he did the morning show. Did he talk about this part that I'm visiting with you about?
A little bit, yes.
Yeah.
I had forgotten the detail. You have a much better memory than I do.
Right.
But, yes, that's all correct.
And he was the youngest disc jockey in Pittsburgh to be ranked number one. So there,
yes.
There we see this track of where it eventually led him. And then his Enid program director came up with another job for him, and this time it was in California, and then that put him on KRLA, which you've already referenced, and there he was there. So that by that time he was 19 or 20 years old, and he was there from 1959 to 1962. Then he moved to KFWB from 63 to 67. So as you said, you remembered listening to him because it was rock and roll music, right?
Yes, it was.
And Jimmy told an interviewer that when he went to KRLA, all the new disc jockeys were put on test shows, and the manager fired everybody, but of course, Jimmy O'Neill. And he was the first voice heard on KRLA when it switched from country western format to top 40. And it quickly became the powerhouse radio station up there. The station went up with Jimmy. Sales of recordings he favored went up and then launched him into television and into Shindig, which obviously we're going to be talking about. Interesting how you listened to Jimmy. I don't know if you were a big fan of Jimmy on the radio or not, or you just heard him, or how it worked with you.
Oh, we just keep our radios on KRLA. We didn't listen. We didn't, you know, move around from station to station. We just kept them on there and left them. Later on, it was the KFWB when Jimmy was working there at KRLA.
Let me come back to Sharon Sheely, because there's an interesting story here, and we could do more on her as well. But she wrote, as I said earlier, Poor Little Fool, and she was a girlfriend of Eddie Cochran, and she co-wrote Cochran's hit Something Else. And she wrote for Ritchie Valens, Del Shannon, and many, many others. And then there was an automobile accident that many will remember in 1960, where Sharon and Gene Vincent survived the crash but took the life of Eddie Cochran, and that was in 1960. Then in 61, she married Jimmy, and they divorced 5 years later in 1966, and she died in 2002. I know you were a former wife, but did you ever meet Sharon? Were you around her?
Oh, yes, I was around her, but before I was married to Jimmy, and after I was married to Jimmy.
I guess they remained friends for some time afterward, as you remain friends,
yeah,
too, right? So then let's get into where he's already a big-time disc jockey personality in Los Angeles. Then he gets involved with a nightclub called Pandora's Box, which was a nightclub coffee house on Sunset Strip in West Hollywood. It was at the center of the Sunset Strip curfew of riots in 1966, which we'll talk about. Now, Eve, I believe you went to Pandora's Box, right?
Yes, I did.
tell us about what you observed there. What kind of a club? How did it operate?
It was a small club. It was on the corner of Crescent Heights and Sunset, so it was right in the heart of what people consider Hollywood. And they had music there all the time, live music. And it catered to teenagers. No alcohol was served there. No food, just drinks. And it was just before the beatniks came in, and everything was very, very 50s there. And I remember seeing the Beach Boys playing there almost every time I went. The Beach Boys were playing, and Leon Russell was playing piano. It was a fun place to go.
Yes. Let me insert here that Leon Russell is an Oklahoman. He was born in Lawton and, of course, lived here in the Tulsa area and had his recording studio, the Church Studios. People from Oklahoma listening to this very well know him. And, of course, Leon was a great studio musician and then became obviously a big star himself, but you remember him there. But then as you went, that was before then you'd ever was introduced to Jimmy, I believe. He came into ownership of that club, right? And how was that? Did he put money up against that, or was there a group, or how did that work?
No, actually, he was a part owner by appearing there, and he would often, you know, introduce the groups there. So he was a regular fixture there, and he didn't own a great deal of it. Most of the club was owned by the people who had started it.
Okay. But they used his name and his personality. And so, okay, I didn't realize that. He was a big presence in the club in introducing people.
Yes, it was known as Jimmy O'Neill's Pandora Box.
Okay, all right. And so artists, like you said, the Beach Boys and the Byrds, Sonny and Cher, do you remember any other people that might have been there?
I don't. I was going to boarding school, and I would just get to go, you know, a couple of times a month, and it was a go-to place when I did come home for the weekend.
And where was boarding school?
That was in Pasadena.
But then it became an eyesore or an ear sore to that area. Loud music, traffic congestion. It's one of the busiest intersections in the city. And then they established a curfew at 10 o'clock, and the young people perceived this as an infringement on their civil rights. And for weeks, lots of tension and protests. And then one day, one of the Los Angeles rock stations announced that there would be a rally at Pandora's Box. As many as 1,000 people showed up, including Jack Nicholson and Peter Fonda, who was handcuffed by police, and it forced the closure of the club. Opened on Christmas for one night, Stephen Stills performed For What It Is Worth. It's just a song written in response to the riot, and Buffalo Springfield had a hit of the song in 1967. So there's, and then I should finish this by saying, in 66, the Los Angeles City Council voted to buy and demolish the club. It was demolished early in August 67. So do you, would you remember then how long Jimmy hung with the club? Was it through to the end of it?
You know, I don't know, but knowing Jimmy, he probably hung with it till the end. Yeah. And then they demolished the club. The club was no longer there. Nothing has ever been built here.
Oh, really? Nothing at all? That's interesting.
No, it's just pavement.
It has become sovereign ground, I guess, right? Holy
it's
ground.
It's become part of the street. It was in a fork where Sunset met the beginning of Crescent Heights. And so what they did was they just paved over it, and it became part of the road.
Hmm.